Previously on X-Men.
Welcome, dear listeners, to a realm where ordinary becomes extraordinary, where the misunderstood become heroes, and where unity conquers adversity. This is the world of mutants, the world of the X-Men. Join us as we delve deep into the stories that have captured the hearts and minds of generations. From the gripping battles of the animated series to the live-action films, this is Exposition, an X-Men podcast. Excelsior!
Welcome to Exposition, an X-Men podcast. My name is Jennifer Smith, and I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Tim Capel. How are you, Tim?
Tremendous, Jennifer Smith. And we are in a new era, Jennifer Smith, because as of this recording, first episode of ours in the X-Men 97 world. So as of our last episode, when we recorded that, the sequel series had yet to debut. Mm-hmm. And now here we are picking up as of this recording, five episodes in. Boy, do they pack a lot in with those five episodes, especially that fifth episode, which is
the talk
all across social media. We, if you're wondering, yes, we are going to get into that. We're not going to do it right off the top here. You'll have to stay and wait. At the end, we will talk some of our thoughts on X-Men 97 to date. So stick around for that. But we are not alone on this outing. We were last time, but we've got a guest joining us. Not so much a guest as a, I guess, recurring family member. And who is that, Jennifer Smith?
We got Grundlenaut himself, Mr. Keithy Langston. How are you, Keithy?
Hey, guys. How are you both? I missed you so much so the last episode. I wasn't able to be there. And I gave myself 30 lashes with my cat of nine tails because of it. So thank you for having me back. I know. I was so disappointed. But it was an excellent show nonetheless that you both recorded. And I give you many props and praises for that. And, you know, it's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here.
Yes. And you were missed. I understand you were off doing research on Muir Island. So
my Genosian
very important
Island.
Work. Very, very important work, but happy to have you back in the fold officially here. So it feels like a proper episode of Exposition now.
Oh, thank you, Bubby. I appreciate it.
Very good. So we're going to be talking just one episode this time, although stay tuned for, again, some X-Men 97 coverage at the end so that you don't feel so shortchanged necessarily. This is, going back to the OG series from Season 1, Episode 8, entitled The Unstoppable Juggernaut, you guys. This originally aired March 6th of 1993. Now, I sort of talked about this on our last episode, but depending if you watched the show in its original run, this was, it's officially Episode 8, but it might have been the 10th episode that you saw. because this was the first of what will become several episodes later on down the line to have aired out of order. Yes, that's right. So this aired in March. Seems like it's a bit of a break, a few weeks off, but no. The problem is the animation for this one was not finished in time for its scheduled airing. So we got the next two episodes after this airing first. So after Slave Island, it was right on into The Cure, and then come The Apocalypse, and then The Unstoppable Juggernaut. They tried to smooth that over, and I can share this with you guys. It's really funny. There's a YouTube clip of the original ending to Slave Island. Was rather hastily altered with some kind of stock animation to just show the X-Men returning home in the Blackbird without incident, rather than the cliffhanger ending that we see today when we watch that episode, where they see the mansion in ruins, of course. That's been the version that's pretty much always aired since, they corrected the episode airing. But it's still made for a pretty wonky experience watching it the first time around. So to basically sum it up, you watch Slave Island, which we talked about last episode. Looks like everything's fine and dandy. The X-Men get home. You pick up with the episode The Cure a week later, and the X-Men are rebuilding the mansion for some reason. You're like, what's going on? Did I miss an episode? They even reference an encounter with the Juggernaut, so you're like, guess that's an untold tale, perhaps. This episode, of course, does open with the X-Men arriving to find the wrecked X-Mansion. So when it did air after, again, that two-parter, it was like, so did the mansion get destroyed and then rebuilt and destroyed again? Like, what is happening with this continuity of this show? And why is Professor X missing again?
You never know.
It was rather obvious, even though they tried to patch it over, that this was completely the wrong order of episodes. But all that is to say that on subsequent broadcasts, they did fix it. They air these in the correct intended sequence, and Slave Island has always been showed with that cliffhanger ending ever since, of the X-Men getting home and everything is destroyed. So anyway, we're getting back from Genosha, that whole adventure, right on into the next one, right? Very little downtime here for our heroes. The X-Mansion is indeed in shambles. And so the X-Men are now frantically trying to clear the rubble in search of Professor X. Jean is scanning for him telepathically. She comes up empty. It's during this sequence that Rogue does mention that to the world at large, that this mansion is just a private school, right? It's not known as the X-Men's headquarters. So why would someone destroy it? This must be someone who perhaps knows of the X-Men's existence and sort of secret headquarters, right?
It doesn't take too kindly to us mutants.
Exactly.
Sugar.
I also noticed another little funny continuity issue here. Storm and Jubilee are back in their civilian duds when they get back to the mansion here, even though they were in their, X-Men uniforms during the Genosian adventure. Storm even makes that dramatic wardrobe change, right, with her powers. And I was like, no, she was already wearing that, so unnecessary. Don't know what happened there. That might have been one of the animation issues. Who knows? They just said, whatever, we just got to get this ready.
I like it when I notice details like that, but then it bugs me when I notice details like that.
Right, exactly.
I got to say, I loved when Rogue, like, no, when Storm is just like, wind, help me.
Yes, always very poetic.
I just love when she does that. She does that again later on, too, with like another, it's so funny.
She talks to the wind. Yeah. It's pretty great.
She shows out quite a bit in this episode. Yeah, she does. She has a lot of sort of creative demonstrations of her power, which you wouldn't think this would necessarily allow for, but she gets some shine, even after taking a beating in that last episode on Genosha. So Cyclops and Jubilee, they find a recording from Professor X in the war room, which is still intact, because it's in like one of the sub basements of this complex. So that was left from before the mansion was trashed, they determine. So that's good. Hopefully that means he made it out okay, but doesn't really say where he is or what he's up to. So that remains rather cryptic. Meanwhile, Wolverine comes upon a pair of pretty gigantic footprints.
Yeah.
And seems to have detected a scent. And he's taken off on his own to investigate.
He's like a dog, right?
Yeah, Wolverine, a little bit.
He found the prints, sniffed it, and then it fucking took off.
Similar impulses as well. Not really listening, just doing his own thing. Going his own way like he always does.
Like he always does.
Yeah. Getting old. It's getting real old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Cyclops even puts his hands on his hips when he says
he does.
Wolverine.
Very, very frustrated mad dad energy here. But
it pops me.
I know.
Yeah.
He's not with Stanford. Oh yeah. He's used to it, but he's still sick of it. So
he practically stamps his foot. The professor wants us to work together.
The professor wants us to work as a team. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. He does send Storm, Rogue, and Jubilee after Wolverine. I guess there's no other place to bring this up, but Gambit is nowhere to be found in this episode. Yep. And I have no idea why. It's not one of those where it's like he's just randomly unaccounted for, because it's like they're all on the Blackbird, right? When they get home. So he should be at least in like a crowd shot or something, but I don't think we ever even see him. So absent is Gambit. Maybe we can just assume he's there behind the scenes at all times. Again, maybe one of those animation issues. They just couldn't fit everybody in. I don't know. In any case, the trio of ex-ladies split up, and Jubilee comes upon a steel-skinned, super-strong Russian mutant who is working a demolition job at a construction site. Okay, that's convenient enough, I suppose. And Wolverine is already on the scene. He collects Jubilee, and I mean, she just assumes they've found their guy, right? The super strong mystery mutant must be the dude who destroyed the mansion. But they're gonna feel this one out a little bit, so they ambush this new guy, who just sort of offhandedly mentions, by the way, that he is called Colossus.
And from Russia.
Yeah. From Russia. Very clearly from Russia with that accent.
Why are you all doing this to me?
Yeah.
What did I do wrong?
I have to ask, is this the voice you guys would hear in your heads when you read Colossus, like in the comics?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Why, it's not for you?
No, it is now, but I think maybe the first time it was a little bit jarring, just because I was like, oh, he really is Russian, right? It's just, I don't know that I, like, as a little kid, probably even had a very good handle on what that would sound like. But it definitely works for me now. And I think it's fitting of his character, who is so powerful and yet so kind of gentle at the same time.
Right.
Because he has every opportunity to like completely demolish these two, right? But he's completely unfazed by their assaults. And he really goes easy on them. Jubilee especially, right? He knows this is just a kid, so he just kind of restrains her. Doesn't even really rough Wolverine up as much as he probably could.
Right.
And that's when Wolverine realizes that this guy, he does not match the scent that he picked up back at the mansion. Maybe he could have made that determination earlier, but at least we get the obligatory misunderstanding fight scene.
I want to point out that when he throws Wolverine, at one point, he goes, oh, that was a good throw right there. Or something like that. And I was like,
God's got a great arm.
The guy's got a great arm. That's a little shout out to something that's going to come into play
little tease for a fastball special, right? Mm-hmm. The famous team up move that they do.
Yeah.
They've done throughout the comics for many years. That's a great point. Yeah, he does toss Wolverine in that fashion.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, we're catching up with Rogue and Storm, who summons Jubilee and Wolverine to First National Bank, which is in the process of being robbed by, as Rogue puts it, somebody big. Mm. And it's pretty messed up, too, much like the mansion. And Wolverine and Jubilee arrive on that scene just in time to see, once again, their old pal Colossus now being carted off in a paddy wagon.
Oh, no, not a paddy wagon.
Mm-hmm. How else are you going to keep this guy in line? I guess he's not putting up much of a fight.
No, admittedly. He's not.
He's professing his innocence that he just wanted to open a bank account. So I think the timing is a little iffy here because it's like, I don't know, like he manages to get there and apparently get in line at the bank or talk to a teller all before Wolverine and Jubilee arrive, even though they were just summoned by Rogue.
Yeah, the time is weird.
Yeah, she's saying there's a big scene happening here at the bank. So anyway, it's a case of mistaken identity, all the same. Wolverine does detect, though, the same scent that he picked up at the mansion here at the wrecked bank. But Storm and Rogue are going to head off to County Lockup to see what Colossus knows, because apparently he mentioned he did spot the actual perpetrator, who I would think would be difficult not to see, right? Like, mm-hmm. As we find out who this is, it's hard to believe that this issue keeps happening. Like, somebody would be like, no, it's not that guy. It's definitely not. They don't look like anything alike, Colossus and Juggernaut here.
I think it takes a lot of balls for the girls to walk into the police station the way they do. Yeah, you know, they just sure considering do. They're, you know, big old flaming mutants, and you would think the cops would not be very cooperative, and they're not. No, and they just casually assault the officer, you know.
Yes.
To break into the prison or now, the jail.
Yeah, Rogue does use her feminine wiles a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
She's on this desk sergeant. Mm-hmm.
But then she just touches him and knocks him the fuck out.
But then she just knocks him out with her powers, yes.
Yeah.
I like her using her actual mutant powers.
Me too.
Right? Yeah.
Because we haven't seen a whole lot of that. In fact, I don't know. I guess, yeah, this is the first time we're seeing it since the Magneto two-parter, where she accidentally ended up with Cyclops' powers.
Right.
So this is one of the rare times that her powers don't seem like a liability, right? She's just intentionally using them and getting a good result. Meanwhile, Storm takes out the security camera. And yeah, they're just breaking into the jail here. And they manage to find Colossus. He's chatting it up with an old pal. That's Beast, you guys.
Well, what a coinkydink.
Yeah, I'm sitting there going, Jesus, this guy's still in jail.
He's still in jail. By his own choice. Because they could have broke him out. They were like, hey, you want in on this jailbreak? He's like, no, I'm good.
It seemed like every episode they're trying to break him out. No, I'm good.
Well, we got to keep him in the mix, you know. Got to remind viewers that Beast is technically still on the show. He's just sitting it out more often than not. Because it
seems like a weird choice for one of your coolest looking cast members, but also maybe an animation issue. Because
he seems difficult to draw. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe not even so much animation as it's just a budget issue where it's like they can't necessarily afford to use
everyone
voice actor in like every episode, you know? And I think this is one of those like growing pains that they have to go through where they're figuring out who are kind of like our most valuable players in this cast. And I think they just looked at, on the face of it, Beast, while visually interesting, his powers, given what the storyline of this first season is, largely they're fighting giant robots.
Yeah, not
perhaps
his strong
not the most. Yeah, so it's like if we're gonna sideline anybody, okay, Beast. But I think having realized like how cool of a character he is, and and how they give him such great lines, and the you know the poetry, which is such an original touch from this show, they're like, we got to work him back in. So they're gonna, if anything, I would say they will overcorrect after this season of sideline.
Ah, okay.
He's gonna be a card carrying prominent member of this cast going forward. We just got to get through that first season. So I'll throw that out there as spoiler, I guess. Don't worry, Beast will get his due. So yeah, he's still in jail. He denied Magneto's attempt to bust him out. Right. Mm-hmm. So here his bail. Keep in mind that when we saw him in court, that was just his bail hearing, and
yes,
it went badly, and he was denied bail. So that's why he's just stuck here in the county jail. He's just awaiting his trial. Still hasn't even been sentenced or anything. So that really sucks for him. Does seem to be taking it in stride, like you guys said. Declines yet another attempted jailbreak here. But Colossus is game for it. He busts right out of his cell, busts right out of the walls of the building, in fact.
That was cool.
Very cool. Very powerful character. I think they're getting that across pretty effectively here. With the way he, you know, transforms, his body is not only transforming into this organic steel, but he's obviously super strong when he does this. So Storm then covers their tracks, and at last we're introduced to the true perpetrator, and he's knocking over another bank.
Two in one day.
So, yeah, busy guy here. And Wolverine and Jubilee have managed to track him down this time. I guess Wolverine's got a better read on that scent. And he identifies right away that this armored behemoth is known as the Juggernaut. So they are acquainted. You think maybe they've had some battles in the past. So he's not terribly surprised when he actually IDs this dude. And we see it's either like the National Guard or just an incredibly militarized police presence that has been dispatched here.
Yeah.
With a tank. Yes. They're shooting laser guns.
Their first shots were with the fucking tank.
Right? Now, granted, I guess that is what you would have to come at the Juggernaut with.
I guess so.
Completely ineffective.
Around with handguns, that's for sure.
But wow, yeah, just wow, right in the street here of New York. I presume this is New York City. Holy shit. So Wolverine is now going to confront Juggernaut directly. That seems like a good idea. He confirms that he did wreck the mansion, of course, searching for Charles Xavier, didn't find him. So he decided to knock over a couple of banks to get the professor's attention, as you do. All right. Fair enough.
I do like he said, like, I knocked on the door and he wasn't home.
Yeah, knocked on the door. Exactly. Right.
I love the Juggernaut's voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
It adds so much to this performance because it could come across as kind of like dumb. Like, he seems like a dumb character, but there's a lot of, like, whimsy in this guy's voice, and, like, I think it adds a lot to it.
I like
there that. Is.
Yeah. I like whimsy. I like that word, whimsy.
Yeah, he has, like, a certain kind of delivery on, I don't know. It's really good.
I've always noticed that. I'm glad you picked it up, because you do think, okay, a big bruiser must be a dumb guy. Mm-hmm. Seems like he should be. Like, somehow that's offset by his poor intelligence, right? Because that's such a cliche thing to do. But he's actually, you know, quite eloquent.
Yeah.
He has a lot of, you know, funny turns of phrase in this episode. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that the guy's particularly scholarly, but he's not a dummy by any means. He's got his wits about him.
Mm-hmm. I like that about him.
Yeah. Yeah. He gives Wolverine a solid thrashing here. So Wolverine gets it where Colossus went easy on him. Juggernaut will do him no such favor. But Jubilee does manage to keep Juggernaut occupied until the reinforcements arrive. This is where it strikes me, I think, how Jubilee's powers have been modified a little bit for this show, where I feel like, I feel like in the comics, especially in the same time period, you know, it's 1993, she really did just like throw fireworks, basically, like generate and throw fireworks. Yeah. And that was, you know, kind of the extent of it, not terribly effective. Where when we see her use her powers offensively in this series, it's more like a particle stream. It's like an energy blast kind of. Mm-hmm. And I don't really remember her using her powers like that in the comics. And if anything, it's, you know, kind of an upgrade.
It is an upgrade.
They hint at, again, in the comics that she's far from reaching like her full potential kind of thing. That she can destroy things on an atomic level potentially if she is practiced enough in the use of her ability. She just, you know, she's not there in 1993. But I don't know, she's pretty capable here thus far in the show, it seems like.
They haven't given her much to do, but
no,
not yeah. Really. This is kind of one of her big tests because Juggernaut, that's nobody to fuck around with. He fucking took that tank and sideswiped it like a
exactly.
Bicycle.
And I did like that they, like she had like her powers were almost concussive blasts as opposed to just, and I hate
sparklers.
Sparklers. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I like that because, it showed that she has a little bit of oomph behind those pops and buzzes, you know?
Yep. So I do like that touch in this series. Now, Colossus, he demands to know how the Juggernaut could leave a fellow mutant to take the blame for his crimes, just hanging him out to dry. And here is where Juggernaut confirms, in fact, that he is not a mutant, but he is powered by magic.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So he is Charles Xavier's stepbrother, not his actual
brother. I did know that.
Yeah. But not a mutant himself. And we don't really see like what exactly does that mean in this episode? Right. Like, where do his magical powers come from? It's, you know, obviously he must have come upon them somehow, right? Mm-hmm. But we're not gonna see that in this episode. We will find out more later.
Do you want to do a spoiler alert? And I could tell Jenny where it comes from, or no?
I think I want to wait.
We can wait. All right,
up to Jenny then. Yeah, I think I'm trying to think.
It does get explained, right?
Oh yeah, it absolutely does. It's kind of he doesn't show up in the second season, but he does come back in the third. So it's a little bit of a wait before you find out the secret of his powers, but they very much do show like his origin.
Okay, cool.
It's just not yet. So, but anyway, he is now, shrugging off combined attacks from Rogue, Colossus, Cyclops, and Storm, who have all arrived on the scene. Storm drops a fucking building.
Yes. That was badass.
Which was awesome. And Jubilee just straight up says, "You killed him."
But and she goes, "Well, you know, shit happens.
Nothing we know can kill him.
Don't be a bitch."
Yeah. So clearly we're seeing this guy is impervious to basically everything. Super strong. Like you said, Jenny, he housed a tank basically. Gene is going for his mind telepathically, but the Juggernaut's helmet shields him from such attacks.
Well, shit.
So that's kind of like, you know, that's Magneto's gimmick, right, from the movies. His his helmet does that. Well, it was Juggernaut's gimmick first, and that's kind of been his Achilles heel, is you can get him, get at his mind, but not his body, right? Mm-hmm. So, in any case, we're going to have to find some way to essentially remove that helmet, which will be easier said than done. But Cyclops is going to rally the team to work together. Again, the professor would want us to work as a team, right, you guys?
Mm-hmm. And they're all like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we got no choice. Yeah. And they do manage to successfully remove that helmet. Wolverine, you know, slices at it with his claws. Mm-hmm. Colossus manages to restrain him long enough that Rogue comes in and yanks the thing right off with her mm-hmm. super strength. With an assist from Storm, who looked like she blinded him with some fog, so mm-hmm. he didn't know what was going on. So good double, triple, quadruple teaming here to get that done. Rogue is now also attempting to absorb his energy, his life force, if you will, for good measure. That sort of goes awry.
Yeah, that was cool.
And this is something we see from time to time when she does use her natural mutant abilities against a powerful enough opponent. She's getting like psychically overwhelmed by his ego, his mind, and essentially is getting like momentarily possessed herself,
right?
Losing her identity in the process.
That's cool.
Yeah, so she's unable to really control herself. Storm is trying to like talk her through it. But that's something we'll see also throughout the series from time to time. That is one of the liabilities / limitations of Rogue's mm-hmm. powers. But Juggernaut is staggered enough that Jean this time is able to basically just wipe his mind with we see she's got a boost from Cerebro, so I guess she brought that along. So without the helmet, she manages to zap him, and then predictably she faints, of course. that's what she does
every time she uses her powers.
It's kind of a weird looking helmet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cerebro.
Yeah.
I think it's like maybe not Cerebro proper, but more like a portable, you know,
kind travel of, version.
Oh, yeah, for the field sort of thing. She says that the effect is at best temporary, right? Mm. And they don't know how long or can't predict when it will wear off, and they'll have to deal with Juggernaut once again.
They just let him stumble off like that.
They just let him stumble off.
I don't get it. Y'all just fought in the city, yeah, and there was tanks and shit, he's just stumbling away. Like,
he's like, whoa, what happened? Where am I? Yeah. Hey, where'd I go?
Somebody else's problem.
I did not understand that ending at all.
It's sort of like, on the one hand, yeah, that seems irresponsible, but also, what can we do? We have no place to put him at the point.
Where I go? What am I doing here? Hey, oh.
Yeah. You would think in this X-Men compound there would be some sort of jail or something.
Right. They could put the bad in one guy. Of those sub basements.
Yeah. They need to, when they rebuild, they need to think about that.
Mm. They really need to do
something with these bad guys instead of just letting them wander off.
Yep. Because, I mean, Magneto more or less did the same thing. Charles zapped his mind. So yeah. Now we see back at the mansion, Colossus is helping to repair the wreckage. He is invited to stick around, in fact, join the team, perhaps. He says he cannot stay, mentions something about needing to find his sister, which seems random, but yes, he does have a sister who is a somewhat prominent character. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's needing to find her or why she's missing, but we never really learn more about that. And that's pretty much it. That's Colossus in his walk-on guest starring role in this episode. He's not in his X-Men uniform at all, mm-hmm. notably, which, I mean, makes sense. He's not a member of the team. He's not a superhero. But he only has two appearances in this series, you guys, for such a...
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
For such a major character. He'll show up one other time in season two. And that's, and at no point is he like in costume. Very, that's always struck me as very odd for, I mean, he was at the time a pretty major character.
Yeah. I wonder if they were thinking later on down the line, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it was one of those. We can always bring him back. We can always get back to his story. And they just don't, because they had so much else to run through, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't have, I guess, a lot of connections to other, like, major villain. You know, he's always mm-hmm. good for a juggernaut fight, but
right.
at the same time, you don't need him there. It's not like they have any personal history, really. Mm-hmm. And he's not tied to any other prominent villains. They kind of try to do that in his next appearance, but that's largely a creation of this animated series, not
yeah.
something from the comics. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's just sort of, I don't know. It's hard to utilize a character who's cut off from the rest of the universe.
There's a huge storyline that's from the comics that don't they use
that he's not present for.
Yeah. Like they use it in the cartoon.
Yeah.
But there's like, And he it's like his major friggin' storyline in the comic,
yeah.
And
yeah.
then they don't even use it in when they kind of talk about that, right?
Right. And I think it's also he can be viewed as sort of redundant with, at least in terms of his power set. Like he's super strong. Like that's pretty much
yeah.
That's pretty much all he brings to the table, powers wise. And it's not like there's anything you can do with him that you can't do with Rogue, you know?
On the show. True. Yeah, that's true.
And in some ways, she kind of outclasses him because she's got other cool powers. So she's like, maybe not as strong, but she's right. still a heavy hitter. Plus, she can fly. Plus, she's invulnerable. Plus, she's got her natural ability. So it's just, you know, I don't know. I think there are other opportunities to maybe use him, but I can see why they just maybe didn't get to it.
Yeah.
And so we pretty much end things here with Wolverine and Jubilee commiserating over, you know, how the destruction of the mansion here is really bumming them out because mm-hmm. they realize it was a lot more than just a building. It was, you know, a lot more than just a school. It was home to them, home to them both. Home. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. A one and done, a rare one and done.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well.
Yeah, we still got to follow up on the professor, but it's like mm-hmm. the immediate threat here of the juggernaut we have dealt with. So how about that, you guys? Pretty. I thought this was a pretty enjoyable outing just to spotlight mm-hmm. like a mm-hmm. Major, I mean, prominent classic villain from the comics, a decent introduction for him, even though we don't learn everything about his backstory. We get enough that we're like, there's something to this guy, and clearly we will see him again in some capacity. And we managed to work in, like I said, another guest star with Colossus, who I really liked here. I'm a big Colossus mark, to be honest.
I think I am too. I couldn't tell you why, but I've always right. liked him.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just like the he's a very tragic character. Like he's been through a lot in terms of just
mm-hmm.
you know, the rule, like the nicest kindest person in your ensemble cast is the person who's going to eat the most shit, basically. Like in all of fiction, that seems to be a pretty significant trope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's very much his role within the X-Men, sadly. And I just you know, I just want Colossus to have a nice day for once.
What else we got? We got to rate it?
Yeah, so let's look at, in terms of our stats, I mean, this isn't really directly adapted from any story in the comics. It has, I did note some similarities to Uncanny X-Men 194, which has the X-Men, like, staking out a bank before, you know, Juggernaut's robbery. It's, mm-hmm. There are enough similarities there that I'm like, okay, clearly they're drawing inspiration from that. But, you know, not too much here in terms of Easter eggs, at least that we haven't already mentioned. I mean, there's Keith pointed out the fastball special kind of tease. Colossus mentions having a sister, but no other supporting characters other than the aforementioned Colossus villain, just Juggernaut. Mm-hmm. And this episode features the entire cast minus Professor X, and for whatever reason, no Gambit.
No Gambit.
Who? Yeah. I think it would have been cool to like see Gambit, you know, charge up the helmet or something, and they blow it off that way. lots of creative uses for Gambit's powers that I'm thinking about here, due to maybe some recent.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, some recent usage of him. So all in all, I think I would give this one 3.5 out of 5.
I'm going to go same, 3.5 X's.
Okay. Very good.
I would probably go, you know what, the ending kind of was, it was goofy, so I think
it's that, a little cheesy.
Yeah,
a little goofy. Like, I would probably go 3.
Okay.
Yeah. I was almost leaning 3 myself, but I was like, I don't know.
The ending's kind of goofy. It's almost too
goofy.
Yeah,
I think there's enough bias again because of my Colossus love and just, you know, Juggernaut. I'm sort of a mark for as well.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it a bump, but it is a little bit of a very cheesy. We all got to work together, team.
Yeah, kinda.
Like there's not a lot of meat to this one, and there that's fine.
Yeah, not a lot of meat.
It doesn't have to. They don't all have to be like high stakes, like drama. So
one of my favorite visual things that happened in the episode was the message that Professor X left for the team was very
his FaceTime
Wizard of
message.
Wizard of Oz looking floating head.
Just pay no attention to the man in the wheelchair.
Right.
Yeah,
it was great.
The projected floating head telling them
awesome.
Basically nothing. Yeah.
It was like, great. I'm not here, and I can't tell you why. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can tell you in the comics at the time that this episode would have aired, again, March 6th of 93, I was looking at the extraordinary Mike's Amazing World of Comics, their newsstand feature, where you can see everything that was basically on sale at the time. Ooh. In any given month and year across various publishers. Awesome resource there. March of 93 was a huge month, like for me personally, without me even knowing it. I was looking at all the titles, just tons of issues that I'm like, oh, I've got that. I've got that. Mm-hmm. I've got that.
That's
and that's
cool.
Like kind of early, you know, in my collecting as a fan, like as much as I loved comics, it's not like, at that particular period of time, I would have had a ton of comics. And I'm like, holy shit. I was like grabbing up all of these. and it's the first time I've really had that experience just looking at, again, that newsstand display on Mike's World. But anyway, in terms of the X-Men, you had a big new solo series starting, Cable number 1. This is... Yeah, first issue of Cable's not a limited series, which he'd been in a limited series before this, but this is his ongoing series that's going to last many, many years. First issue of that. So kind of a big deal there. Another big deal, Uncanny X-Men issue 300. So anniversary, and I remember really loving that issue. Art by John Romita Jr., who had also done the 200th issue, 100 issues prior of that same series. So bringing him back, that was great. Really, really into that period on Uncanny X-Men. And so again, keeping along with that anniversary theme, there was, looks like this was just like, I don't know what to call it, like a promotional item or like an ash can, some kind of promo in any case. It was called the Maximum Anniversary Experience one shot, which basically it's a lot of hype for what's going to be happening in the X-Men and Avengers titles throughout the year of 1993, because both properties are celebrating a 30th anniversary in that same year. There will actually be a team up kind of crossover between them later in 93, which is kind of doo-doo shit. I have a soft spot for it. I have a soft spot for that crossover, but objectively it kind of sucks. But this was, they put together a little hype package for that. So yeah, interesting month here, interesting time period in comics, March, early March of 93. So that's 1993. That is the OG X-Men animated series. On a completely different note, we have 1997.
Yeah. You know,
the year that this here series ended, the year that had it continued, they would have done, I guess, a sixth season. So now picking up once again, we have all these years later, the sequel, X-Men 97, you guys. First announced long, long time ago. I think back in, God, I think it was announced that they were working on this in either 2019 or 2020.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it just being a long wait for this thing to happen. I was like, okay, last fall, I was like, that would, you know, kind of coincide pretty well. I'd say it's 30 years later. You know, get a new X-Men animated series on the air for that fall lineup of 2023. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Got pushed out. Now I'm hearing, okay, it's going to be January. Doesn't happen. Then we hear rumblings March. It's going to debut in March. I had my doubts. I didn't think it would happen, but it did. We saw the great trailer that was put together, and then all the drama over the showrunner leaving. It's like sort of puts a bad taste in mouth before the debut. I don't know exactly why timing wise they would do that. But when all is said and done, we get the premiere on March the 20th, two episodes dropping of X-Men 97. I was pretty blown away, I have to say.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know, not, and this is going to be a discussion, not just, you know, the first two episodes, but the first five, which have aired to date. So we're halfway through the 10 episode scheduled first season, and this has just been, I mean, trampling whatever expectations I had. And I had pretty high expectations. Mm-hmm. So I was like, they've got to get this right, you know. And if there's anything that bugs me as an X-Men fan, I'm probably going to single it out and scrutinize it more than most would, right? Because I'm just so ride or die for these characters and this concept. But holy shit, they've, I mean, been knocking it out of the park. Just in a lot of ways, I've always thought that X-Men the Animated Series was the best adaptation of that comic in any other form of media, more so than the films, I would say. And kind of have to agree that is still the case as far as I can tell. It's really doing right, you know, as much as I am a Cyclops truther, of course. boy, does, again, yeah, that sadly dismissed showrunner, Beau DeMaio, seem to love him some Cyclops.
Yeah, he did.
This is like, look, I'm putting y'all on notice. Y'all talk shit about this man for years. You can go fuck yourself, because this
is about to be Cyclops, the star of this shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you will stand up and take notice and give this man respect. Yep.
And yeah, and that's even without the original voice actor, sadly. Mm-hmm. Norm Spencer no longer with us, but you've got Ray Chase now taking over, and I gotta say, I'm having this funny experience where a lot of the voice actors that they have been able to retain, which is great, don't get me wrong, I'm like, they sound less like the characters that they used to than some of the new additions to this cast.
Like, right? Rogue, isn't she the same?
Yeah, lady? Rogue is still Lenore Zahn. Yeah.
And she sounds totally different to me.
Mm-hmm. She sounds different now. I mean, I'm glad, you know, again, very glad they were able to bring back who they were able to. But you can tell, like, obviously your voice is going to change after 30 years. We can't expect.
Yeah. Who knows what Rogue's been doing in those 30 years.
Yeah. And Wolverine, Cal Dodd, who does Wolverine, is much, he's a little bit more old man Logan now.
Yeah,
I would say. No disrespect. But
seriously, though, I mean, I'm noticing that. I'm like, this guy doesn't sound anything like Wolverine. It's the same guy.
I mean, I think it still works, but I'm also kind of not as attached to Wolverine, so I'm like, and he's sort of not a major part. He's not like a major character in this, which I'm sort of loving. I'm really actually loving. Because again, it feels more true to the comics, where Wolverine has never really been front and center. Like, he's rarely the focus. Because again, he's got his own series where he can do Wolverine-centric stories. When he's in the X-Men, he's part of an ensemble. And yes, he's a major character within that team, but he doesn't drive a lot of storylines, like pure X-Men storylines, when you look at their history. More recently, I'd say that's the case, but historically, no, not so much. And it just feels very true to that in this show. So that's something I appreciate. The animation is obviously different. There's been some controversy, shall we say, over that. Where's Rogue's cake, right?
Yeah, well, that's been the least of my concerns.
About the dumbest criticism I have. Yeah. Honestly, I think I finally, it's like, all right, if this is what you're showing up with, like, if that's the best you can come up with at this point, when you're determined to find something wrong with this show, which it seems like a lot of people have that agenda, right? Mm. Not to get into the whole, but that's a culture thing, right? Where people, their entire identity is devoted to, oh, it's modern Disney, so it sucks, right?
Sucks, right, yes.
And they've all pretty that. Much, yeah, they've pretty much been shut down. They have been shut,
yeah,
up
agree.
Shut
yeah.
down
yeah.
and are showing up to, you know, a gunfight with a sparkler. When they, you know, bring up this, well, you know, Rogue doesn't look, shut up. Just
well, the way I always say is that there's nothing but just a ton of trolls out there who are just willing to do whatever it is to just say that this thing sucks and that it's not as good as it was. And, you know, I mean, I used to just say it was like Star Wars fans, but I've moved on and said that it's mostly everybody now. Like, they're just no one, everyone just. Huh? I mean, everybody just...
It's like everybody gets there eventually, it seems.
Yeah, like everybody remembers...
Yeah, depending on your fandom, yeah.
And you know what the funny thing is that if you ask those people back in the day, they'd complain about what was currently on then anyway. So it's just... Mm. People are just trolls, and you just have to, you know... I always say, what am I looking for, Shakespeare? I mean, seriously, I'm here to be entertained, you know?
I am...
Yeah.
And I am about entertained.
Talking about the animation style... I think only in the past, maybe the last two episodes, which would be 4 and 5, in some of the fight scenes, it got a little too anime looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
But
you can see
then,
that influence for sure.
Yeah, you can definitely see it. But not all anime is bad. I like some anime styles.
Yeah.
I like this animation for the most part. It's a fine, and it's a nitpick, and it's a fine line between, you know, that cool kind of retro style, like back you know, to the 90s is there, but it's just a little more slick and more anime influenced at times. But really, I mean, I've been overly impressed with the animation overall.
It's kind of like, do you remember watching like the first few seasons of South Park? And oh, then, God. And if you watch like South Park now, it's still similar, but you can tell it's no longer just paper.
Right. Yeah.
It looks like it was literally like construction paper.
Yeah. Like it's a lot more smooth now than it was back in the day. That's how I kind of felt with this. Yeah. But yeah, I do see a heavy influence on anime with like certain like pause shots where it's just like, you know,
pause shots for sure.
Yeah. The pause. Yeah. There was particularly in the first episode where there's a sequence where they're flying out to the desert in the Blackbird, and they get attacked by really dramatic. I mean, it's an awesome sequence, but like the Sentinel like blows up the back of the Blackbird and actually grabs Cyclops, who turns around and he like cleaves off the top of the Sentinel's head with an optic blast. And it all is happening so fast. It's a little hard to keep up with. And then there's a shot where, I mean, it looks like the Blackbird just plows through them, right? And it's like, how did the Sentinel not get completely destroyed? How did Cyclops even live through that? And it's because of some of that, I think, that jump cutting that they're doing that just makes it a little bit tricky to follow those more intricate action scenes. But that's, I'd say that's been more the exception than not. If anything, I've seen the animation compared, a lot of comparisons been made to like the Marvel versus Capcom video games, which X-Men have been pretty prominently featured. And I can totally see that some of the character models. And I mean, even the like kind of special attacks from those games that are in some ways feel like they're being incorporated into the show, but in, you know, non-obvious ways. So that overall, I'm just glad it has more of a foothold in that 90s animation style than something more contemporary like Marvel's What If. Like I kind of hate that animation on What If, to the point to the point that I kind of quit watching it. It didn't bother me too much in the first season, but I don't know if I was either more sensitive to it or if it actually changed in the second season, where I was like, this just looks horrible to me. Like, I hate it. It feels like almost Uncanny Valley with the way it's almost photorealistic, but still clearly animated. I hated it.
I don't mind that style, but I am definitely glad they went with something different for X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. It very much has its own identity, which you want with something like this. I also would have to say I am pretty blown away by the tone of this, which I thought would be still like a Saturday morning cartoon, but just with less handcuffs. Yeah. Like maybe like instead of saying, oh, he'll destroy us all, they'll actually be able to say die and kill and stuff like that. But for the most part would be plots and stories and language that you could see in like a sophisticated Saturday morning cartoon show. But to my shock, this has not been for kids, I don't think.
Yep. I don't think it was even made for kids. I think it was made for us.
Holy shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I thought it would be for us, but still with an eye towards like being kid friendly. Like, you could sit down and watch it with your 7-year old. And I guess maybe you still could, but I don't know. I think there's a lot of parents out there who would be like, I don't think my kid is quite ready for something like this.
The whole Jean Grey storyline is like,
oh my God,
a little child's mind. Like, what happened to the baby?
What, they basically killed a baby, right? I mean, didn't kill, but effectively, like,
separated it from its mother and father, and
from its mother and child. Like this poor baby born into the world knows barely a day of any warmth or love or kindness, and then becomes horribly sick and is dying. It's like
whisked off to the future. Yeah, like, what the fuck?
We can't do this in Saturday morning cartoons. Like, there's no way.
It's crazy.
I mean, the Batman animated series couldn't have gotten away with that. Yeah. No. This is so not. And I even thought, no way do they dare to keep. I knew Madeline was going to be in the show, right? For one thing, they had. This happens a lot, right? Where they release a line of toys, action figures, some kind of merchandise that inadvertently maybe spoils something from.
Oh, you guys spoiled on Madeline?
A little bit, but I don't know, somehow or another, I think I knew she would play a role even before that in some form or fashion. And legitimate, like, again, from the comic, she was Scott's first wife, and they had that little baby together who, you know, spoiler, becomes Cable, which it seems like we're getting to.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, so, and to me, in my mind, it's like, in a lot of ways, the X-Men animated series, even going back to the 90s, when they would do straight adaptations from the comics, in a lot of ways, they would feel like a do-over, a chance to say, how would we do this, like, knowing what we know now, knowing the direction we would want to take these characters, having, like, a second draft, essentially, how would we do this? And I think the cleaner version of Cable's origin is he's just Scott and Jean's kid, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, maybe do all the future stuff, fine, but it's a lot messier to say, oh, Cable's parents are Cyclops and a clone of Jean Grey, right? Like, it's weird to try to explain that. So
yeah,
if you want to simplify it, you just have it Scott and Jean, and it's like, okay. Right. And I thought for sure that's what the show would do, and they're like, nope, we're keeping it as messy.
Yeah,
as messy as it ever was. And
I love that the point, about it.
We don't even know, right, when Jean was replaced by her clone. I mean, did Scott marry Jean or did he marry Madeline?
I think he married Madeline. I think she's been a clone for a while.
I mean, was she even, because you got to keep in mind, like, Jean's memories, so she was amnesiac when she should, we're getting into the third episode now, obviously. Jean was amnesiac, then we determined very quickly this is genuine article, original Jean Grey. She doesn't have her memory. She's gradually regaining them. And then when she does that kind of mind meld with Madeline, their memories cross. And at that point, you can't really distinguish one from another. Mm-hmm. And Jean herself is confused as to, okay, is this memory or is this Madeline's?
Isn't that freaky? So,
yeah, so that's...
I love that.
We're in a place now where, I mean, I'm not even sure that, you know, it was Jean who was the Phoenix originally in the show. Because Madeline has those same memories. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she was either cloned late enough that she has most of Jean's memories, or Jean has been out of the picture for a long time, and these truly were Madeline's experiences.
The only weird thing, though, is that Jean still has these memories.
Well, she picked them up from Madeline, though, when they did that mind meld deal. So she's confused to the point that, did I experience this, or am I just now copying her memories, thinking they're my own, right? Mm.
Were Scott and Jean married before she was Phoenix or after?
Scott and Jean were not married until after all of this.
Okay.
You're talking about in the comics?
Right.
Yeah, so Jean had presumably died as the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Scott then met Madeline Pryor, who
right, that's right.
looked just like Jean, to the point that he was like, are you the Phoenix reincarnated? And she denied, you know, she just denied up and down that she had anything to do with Jean Grey. And they, you know, have kind of a whirlwind romance. They get married. And then Jean comes back from the dead. So that kind of shits all over that whole deal. The only thing that kind of bugged me about, well, there are a few things that did bother me about that third episode, which incorporates, I mean, it packs in a lot. I mean, no less than three major storylines. I mean, you've got essentially the relationship between Scott and Madeline, which was its whole thing leading to a marriage. You have Madeline being revealed as the clone and doing a version of Inferno, which is a major X-Men event from the late 80s. Basically a big demonic invasion of Manhattan led by Madeline and her Goblin Queen form.
Yeah, the Goblin Queen.
Dressed a little bit more chaste in this series, I will say.
Oh, I loved it.
She's great. Still hot, though.
That's great from the comic.
It's still extremely sexualized, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just they're not going to show Mark Silvestri drew her as almost wearing nothing in the comics. Yeah. She's strategically covered, you know, tits and crotch, and that's about it. So we're you know, a little bit different, but still, I mean, very striking visuals as the Goblin Queen. Then we get, of course, the stuff with the baby getting infected with this virus and having to be sent off into the, that's its whole totally separate storyline.
Right.
This easily could have been a three-parter. This could have been a like a slow burn season ender kind of thing. And it's not even two episodes, right? They just cram all this. all this into one, you know, I say 30, more like 26 minute outing.
Well, I don't blame them for doing that. You know, we don't get like, you know, 15, 18, 20 episode seasons anymore. Exactly. So I don't blame them for condensing this shit down. I mean, everything still flowed. Like, it's a lot of information, but every minute is used beautifully.
Yeah.
Nothing's wasted. Yeah. And you're on the edge of your seat, like every one of these episodes.
Yeah, to your point, they don't know how many chances they're going to get, right? Mm-hmm. So, I know the show has been renewed for a second and now third season. But going in, they don't know that. So it's a question of what do we want to do with the episodes that we know, the time that we know we have, what are our priorities? We want to at least address this. We want to do a version of it. So how can we do the best version of that? With the understanding that maybe all we've got are 10 episodes, right? You're going to go for broke.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely do. I would say another thing I was bothered by, you know, pacing is one thing. It, you know, just to me as the comics reader, it's a little bit like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. But some of the decision, like, okay, so Madeline, is just, you know, a clone of Jean Grey. We find that out early. And so she goes through this, I don't know, maybe she was compelled by Mr. Sinister, who's a part of this episode, to her corruption takes place very quickly. And the whole, now I'm the Goblin Queen, seems sort of out of left field, right? It feels more like I'm doing this because I, the character in this TV show, read the comics. as opposed to like being an organically motivated character choice. And the same thing with now at the end, why is she suddenly saying, call me Madeline? Where is she getting this name?
Where did she get that? Yeah, I did wonder
she
about
just
that.
Plucked it out of thin air, basically. Yeah. Again, well, that's who I was in the comics. So
right, yeah. I got you.
So I felt a little bit like writing backwards. Mm. That will never not bother me, I think, as many times as I rewatch that episode as much as I did enjoy it. I think I'll always be thrown by some of that. This is only happening because, well, the comics did it. But beyond that, I mean, so we get to that fourth episode. I don't know. It's, I'm sure a lot of people would say, well, that's the filler episode this season.
Yeah, the Jubilee one.
Yeah, with Mojo. Yeah, and
with Mojo. Yeah, that was interesting visually, but not much.
I like the visuals. Yeah, I like some of the visuals in that. It's sure, it's a little light on plot. I think maybe they thought we've been going at such a breakneck pace. Maybe we pump the brakes now.
Need a one-off.
Do a little one-off. But they still, at the same time, they're like, yeah, but let's try to make up for that by catching up with Storm. And now she's, and again, the stuff with Forge, that romance to me is a bit rushed. He's suddenly declaring his love for her. I'm like, you guys just read the comics. It's, this is not earned. This is really not earned.
This is not earned. You sound like an incel, sir.
I know, but I see where they're going with it at the same time. So I'm like, okay, fine. And I think for the most part, Storm as a character has been very well written throughout this series.
She's been heartbreaking too.
Like, yes,
losing her powers has been awful for her and for us, because she is one of the cooler looking characters.
And is so defined by her powers.
Yeah, so cool too.
Is someone who embraces her powers and her identity as a mutant more than most, because why wouldn't you if you have that power?
You're an Omega level mutant,
fucking goddess. Yeah. And I mean, that scene in the second episode where she's, what does she say? I can no longer feel the breeze.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, rough. And I had no idea they were going there. Here again, yes, she does have an arc in the comics where she loses her powers for a pretty significant period of time. But I just, it completely caught me off guard that they did that. And as early as they did, where she takes that blast, takes the blast from Magneto. In the comics, it was a shot intended for Rogue. So that's another thing they're doing in this. They're sort of mixing and mashing, doing a lot of mashups of separate storylines, but if there's a thematic link, sort of putting them together. You know, we saw that with the Madeline stuff and the baby, and you know, you get Trial of Magneto, but we also get Storm losing her powers, which those were many, many, many issues apart. Where these things happen, but the show really weaves it together and makes it work. And that's one of the ways it keeps surprising me pleasantly, I would say. And, you know, that really continues on into that, holy shit, that heartbreaker of a, you know, fifth episode we just saw.
Oh boy.
Oh, with, I mean, Genosha just getting wiped off the map, basically.
Yeah. I was like, what? And
poor Gambit.
And the heartbreaker of possibly Gambit now dead. I mean, high body count coming out of that one, including a main character who, Keith, I know you have a lot of attachment to. And
I do.
That episode is probably most fresh in your mind. You just watched it today, right?
Yeah. And I'm still just like, what? Like,
I don't know.
I mean, the part that hurt me the most was Rogue's like final, because I mean, they're pushing they push this whole narrative of Rogue and Magneto being the only one that can touch Rogue because of his electromagnetic field protects him from her power dampening or her power draining powers or whatever. So it's like they go, you know, and they make this point where she basically breaks up with Gambit, and says, you know, I'm going to go with Magneto. And he says, well, then we'll just remain friends and we'll always be friends until he hurts you again. And, you know, just like this kind of this like great, almost like a great breakup scene, you know,
it is.
And mm-hmm. and he handles it like a fucking champ, you know?
Yeah, if anything, you would expect the inverse, where like Rogue's thing, honestly, has never been about we can't have a romantic relationship because I can't touch. That's always been whoever her would-be suitor's issue is, right? Is,
right.
Always trying to find some way around it, always, you know, questioning, oh, you know, is that really, are your powers really uncontrollable? Is that just something you tell people? Is it all in your head? And, you know, her getting very, you know, offended by the insinuation. And here Gambit's like, I don't know what your problem is. Why can't we be together even though we can't touch? Not knowing right. she has this history with Magneto, which I don't like at all. I'm just going to say it. I don't like that. I don't like the history with her and Magneto at all.
Hold on, though, because that's what I feel happens in the end of the episode, towards the end of the episode, where she's dancing mm-hmm. with Magneto and they kiss. And she looks at right. him and says, it is more than skin deep, or it's not more than skin deep or something. And so basically she's saying, I understand that you and I might be the only person I can shtup, but I don't want to shtup you because there's
you're not
more,
Gambit.
Right. There's more to me and Gambit. And then her at the end, you notice she's not wearing gloves and she's holding him. Right. And she says, similar to Storm, where Storm says, I can't feel the breeze. She goes, I can't feel you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's like mm-hmm. crying. And it's that sad kind of crying, like, I can't feel you. And that to me got me. And I was like, oh, shit. Like,
yep.
He might really be gone, you know?
And he goes out thinking that she rejected him,
yeah.
essentially. Yeah. He does not realize that she had a change of heart,
right?
But it did not stop him from.
He goes out like a boss. Like yeah. that was fucking awesome. How he goes out, because mm-hmm. he charges. He gets stabbed by the friggin' Rogue.
How you like the use of the lasso there, Jenny? The lasso.
Oh, the lasso was really good. Sentinel.
He's impaled yes. by it.
He was impaled by the. I almost fucking laughed.
Yeah,
but I
thought of you. Shocked. I thought of you immediately.
Yeah, it was
like,
awesome.
Oh, you can never make fun of the lasso again.
But it was cool though. Like he basically charges, like he supercharges the friggin' the spear or whatever, and then it just blows up the whole thing. Like that was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
So just goes to show you just how strong he is as a person. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's his final act, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he even goes out with the catchphrase, the episode's title, which I love the sort of double meaning of that too. You know, remember it not only that was Gambit's like calling card sort of throughout this. He says it many times throughout the original series, but it's sort of like now it serving as a tribute to him. And this tribute to Genosha itself, like this is like I've seen it compared to like a 9/11 level event for this universe,
okay.
You know, which is like it's one of those, you remember where you were, mm-hmm. you know, place and time sort of deals. And in some ways it feels like just kind of peeling off the innocence of this world where it is set. It's not just called X-Men 97 thematically, right? It is explicitly yeah. set in 1997. So you think of kind of the optimism and the whimsy, Jenny, of the 90s.
Oh, yes.
And how that ultimately was, for a lot of people, I feel like, torn away when this historical event changes everything. And
exactly.
And that's what, again, the former showrunner, Beau DeMaio, said this was meant to kind of serve as, when he released a statement after this episode being like, y'all okay? because so clearly we were not okay.
We were not okay.
We were not okay. It's a lot to pro, and I don't think we're gonna get any immediate follow up necessarily in that sixth episode.
Oh, I don't think so?
Yeah, I feel like that's gonna. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be dealing with or resolving Storm and Forge's situation. So they're gonna make us wait. But
well, yeah, it seems like it's the next episode though. So. At least that's on Wikipedia. It's titled that. So,
what's it? The sixth episode is titled
"Life Death Part 2."
Yeah, yeah. So that's okay. Hinting at because they were Life Death Part 1. Right. So obviously we've got to wrap that up. I mean, I'm sure we'll.
That'll be coming out by the time this airs. It would already.
I know. By the time this airs, we'll already have been talking about it. But that's where we are. Plus, you get apparently Cyclops and Madeline still have a little thing going on telepathically.
That's kind of funny too because and forgive me, it's been a while. I know he had that kind of ongoing, I guess, telepathic affair. With Emma Frost.
Yeah, he had a full on psychic.
Yeah, that wasn't Madeline. So that's kind of something that.
Right. So that's one of those mashups that they've done.
Yeah. Where
the whole concept of leveling Genosha like that.
Yeah.
With the tri headed sentinel, comes from that E is for extinction storyline. That's. You know, where Cyclops and Emma Frost are part of that new team of X-Men.
Right.
Leads to their psychic affair. Well, Emma's a part of this storyline in the show. She plays a role, but, has no interaction with Cyclops. That is now given to Madeline. And it's just like, oh my God, there's so much to keep track of and is happening here.
And I think the last thing to point out too is that, Jean kisses Logan,
and Jean is making out with Wolverine.
But Logan pulls back, and he's like, "No, you're Scott's girl." He's like, "No."
It's Scott and Jean.
This is wrong. Scott and Jean. It's Scott and Jean. It's Scott and Jean. And I was like, "Ooh, that's a difference." I feel like,
and for her to be the one to initiate it, right?
Sure.
It's not him pining for her. It's she goes for it. And then sort of intrusively walks in on, I guess, Scott. I didn't really get we're doing anything underhanded here between Scott and Madeline. It felt more like, I mean, yes, there were some maybe role-playing going on, but it didn't feel kinky to me in the way that his stuff with Emma Frost did in the comics. It was more like, we are two deeply traumatized people
who
have essentially
there's only one person that knows the pain I'm going through, and that's Madeline. But Jean's like, kinda, fuck that shit. She's like, fuck that
noise. And she, I mean, kind of understandably, I sort of see where she's coming from, but also, you did just make out with Wolverine, so
so hush up a little bit.
So I like that it's leaning into both of them are kind of behaving badly, and there's no right answer here. I have no idea where they're going to take those two as characters, because it just seems like, I mean, how do they just pick up? They don't even know where they left off, right? Again, we don't know.
Tim, did you ever pick up like Claremont's like later run that he did like just a few years ago? He kind of picked up, and did you read it? I never picked it up and read it, but I think he had a whole thing where he had like Jean and Logan kind of continue on, I think, right?
I would say, yeah, he originally had kind of put the whole love triangle thing to bed and was like, that's it. There's really, it's never going to happen between Jean and Logan. But then later on, he kind of revived it because he hated the fact that Scott's happy ending where he was married off with Madeline was basically destroyed by editorial. resented that for a long time.
Yeah.
And kind of never got past it creatively. So he sort of heated up Gene and Logan once again. Yes. And that's what a lot of.
But in that run though, it was because I think Scott and Emma were together.
Scott and Emma did become an item officially.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was after Gene died yet again. A lot of that was done by Grant Morrison. That was all like during the new X-Men over a period of years where Scott and Jean just sort of grew apart. Her powers were increasing, sort of becoming one with the Phoenix. All that stuff was from Grant Morrison. And again, the very beginning of that run is where you had Genosha getting decimated. A lot of that is baked into this. Even though it's called X-Men 97, we're getting into some early 2000s territory, it seems like. I'm going to make a bold prediction, guys. I'm going to throw it out there. I want to know if you guys are thinking along the same lines, I guess. I think they're setting us up to have our hearts broken by Magneto.
Oh, I hope so. Yes.
You hope so.
I hope so. I love Magneto in this series, so I need a big honking heel turn from him.
That's exactly where I just don't trust him. I feel like I don't want to say he was the mastermind behind like Storm losing her powers, right? Like, but he did seize on that to his advantage very quickly.
Yes, he's played it perfectly. I can see them revealing all of this at the end as his way to destroy the X-Men.
Right, exactly, because that leads to her ouster from the team. She's a mainstay. She would have posed a major leadership challenge to him, right? Yep. So if he can get her off the board, he doesn't have to worry about Scott and Jean so much because they're a disaster right now.
just throw a clone in there and then fuck them all up.
Yeah, and I don't know that he really had anything to do with that. But again, take advantage of the situation. Rogue, he sort of has had wrapped around his finger. Conveniently, now Gambit has been disposed of.
Right.
Bishop has, gone away off to so he's less of a problem you have to worry about in terms of someone who has knowledge of the future and, what Magneto does or doesn't do in subsequent episodes here. I think Bishop is going to come back at some point, though. The team is in disarray, and I'm curious if we see, another mainstay longtime member leave or get incapacitated in some way, that's going to be kind of the tell to me that he's orchestrating this or at least playing the cards in such a way, playing the chess pieces that this is all like some grand takeover scheme kind of deal where, and maybe Genosha was like a means to an end because if anything, all these mutants getting massacred, wouldn't that make the world even more sympathetic towards them? So wouldn't maybe that was, and that's, isn't that what Magneto wants is, that's his way of achieving his very sick way of achieving Charles's dream,
I don't know. Ye of little faith. I feel like
I know. I love that character,
I think there's way more villains out there than to have this big slow heel turn.
Sure.
I feel like it's, I don't know if I buy that. I mean, it's a great theory. It would be unbelievable if that's the twist at the end, but
it would be gutting, you know.
It would be gutting, yeah.
It would also make me feel better about Magneto and Rogue having this past together, because I feel like only a real scumbag does that. Like, takes advantage of this young girl who can't control her powers, blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying, I'm not even getting into the whole, ooh, he groomed her, which that is, apparently that is, she was meant to be in her early 20s, an adult. There's nothing icky like that going on. It's just more of
it as icky like that.
A lot of people apparently have.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's just based on, like, you know, when Rogue runs away from home, when her powers first emerge, mm-hmm. she is a teenager, mm-hmm. right? And this this seems early in her history, but you know, she also had taken up with Mystique, so it probably been a few years that she'd been on the run, I guess. And you know, I'm totally fine with the fact that, okay, yeah, she's a young woman, she's mm-hmm. not a child when this happens. I don't like it, because I just, in my head, I picture, imagine Anna Paquin and Ian McKellen. It's just gross.
But that's, you know, kind of, but
this man is ancient.
Right, it's kind of right. Hot. What are you talking about?
Ancient.
Yes. Oh boy.
We're not even, this is not even a Magneto where it was like, oh, well, it got de-aged at some point, so really they're more like the same age. So this is ancient Holocaust survivor Magneto. So it's just, but if he's gonna be this rat bastard, you know, we're waiting for that other shoe to drop, then yeah, a guy like that would hook up with this young woman.
Yeah,
I like it,
and I kind of am okay with it after that, if we're doing that just total out and out bastard version of Magneto.
Right,
not my favorite version of the character, but if they do that, guess what? I'll say they earned it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now something's been earned. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll continue to talk X-Men 97 as we go through our journey here. I'm sure that we will have thoughts about the second half of the first season here. And but we continue on. What do we have for our next episode? Are we doing...
Oh, yes. For our next episode of Exposition, we're going to be tackling the two-parter, as it was intended to air, those being The Cure, which is a Rogue-centric episode, and that is going to lead into Come the Apocalypse, which, as you might imagine, is an apocalypse episode. So we'll do both of those together. Yeah, see how this series takes him on.
All right,
and we get more Cable as well.
Yes, so, more Cable. Yeah. Looking forward to all of that, and hopefully, Keithy, you can hang around and be there for us for our next episode. Do you want to plug anything real quick?
Me? Sure. I fully intend to be here. Well, you can always check out every week on your own podcatcher apps or whatever you have. Petey and I on GFA Live every week, usually comes out on the weekends at some point. And you can also catch every other Friday on the North South Connection podcast feed. You can check out A La Carte with Keithy. Yep. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to Hail to the Keith, my first episode that dropped a couple weeks ago, go back and check that out. I know I'm already getting tons of interesting requests for a Hail to the Keith number 2. So, I have my topic, I think. So I'm going to, when I release that, I'm starting the log of people that are saying, hey, talk about this and talk about that. So, yeah, but then check those out. And then also you can see me on Cronoso on the North South Connection podcast that comes out every month. So, and then I love to make appearances on other things as well, but also, as you know, my favorite show on the North South feed or the Jenny Position feed is Talking Docs, and I want to hear Jenny talk about Talking Docs.
Yeah. All right, Tim, what about you?
Oh, stepped right over it. Okay.
Well, I'll close it out.
I don't have a whole lot in terms of other things to promote right this second. Although I will say, if you are a fan of another great 90s television drama, that is Beverly Hills 90210, I'm also doing a retrospective of that in podcast form. It is called 9021 NOSO, an affiliate of the North-South Connection. It's myself and JT Rosero. We are now up to season 3 of Beverly Hills 90210, just first few episodes in, so could be a good jumping on point if you have not been listening, but you are interested in that series. You can find me as well on Twitter. X, I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E, 68. And what do you got, Jenny?
All right. So on Wednesdays, right here on North South Connection, you can find this show, GCW, a game-changing podcast. And like Keithy said, Talking Docs, where we review documentaries. And right now we're on season 3, and that is serial killer season. And we have talked Jeffrey Dahmer, we talked Eileen Wuornos, and then we have the Zodiac Killer coming up soon.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. Yeah, lots of cool stuff on Talking Docs. I have ideas for cool new shows, too, so hopefully I can get moving on some of that stuff. And across all socials at Jenny Position, you can find me. Follow me there, and thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.